Last year, 2023, nearly 7.5 million people in this country took a giant step in their lives. They brought a child into the world. They became parents. But how many of those people were prepared for parenthood is a different matter. Take, for example, the man left in charge of his infant son while his wife went to the store. Well, when she returned, the child was crying and her husband was sweating. He was at a loss for what to do. Well, the wife walked over to the crib and instantly detected the problem. She took one whiff and she knew that the diaper needed changing. It had been filled several times over. She moaned. She said, "Honey, why didn't you change the diaper?" Well, the new daddy held up the box of disposable Huggies and he pointed to the print on the package. He says, "Well, it says right here, good for up to 10 pounds. Hey, not all dads or moms, for that matter, are prepared for the rigors and challenges of being a parent. And I have no room to laugh. When my daughter Natalie was just a few weeks old, I told Kathy she could go off with her friends while I took care of the baby. It was bedtime and my little girl was hungry, and so I fed her 8 ounces of sweet-tasting Similac, gave her her complimentary burp, prayed for my daughter, tucked her into bed. I had just settled into Monday Night Football when I heard some horrible sounds emanating from the bedroom. Awful, gagging sounds. Incredible noises. I rushed in to discover that Natalie had thrown up all 8 ounces of that formula. I cleaned up my daughter, put fresh sheets on the crib, and then I walked into the kitchen, still puzzled over what I had done wrong. Believe it or not, I looked over into the trash can and I saw the can of formula in the garbage. Words were on that label that I had never seen before. It read, "Concentrated, must add water." I had given my princess 8 ounces of undiluted 100-proof Similac, the equivalent of 32 ounces of formula. If babies could sue for parental malpractice, she would have had a case. Entering the hospital to birth a baby is a thrilling new deal. But bringing that baby home from the hospital can be a chilling ordeal. All kinds of self-doubts arise in your mind. Am I ready for this responsibility? Am I prepared to tackle the challenges? Do I have the wisdom and the know-how to be a good parent? Here's a little spoof I found. It's titled "Preparation for Parenting." Supposedly, if you really want to prepare yourself to be a parent, here's what you should do. First, go to the supermarket. Arrange for your salary to be paid directly to the cashiers for the next 18 years. Second, buy your favorite magazine. Read it for the last time. To discover how nights are spent as a parent, walk around the living room from 5 p.m. to 10 p.m. carrying a wet bag weighing approximately 8 to 12 pounds. At 10 p.m., put the bag down. Set the alarm for midnight. Go to sleep. Get up at midnight and walk around the room again with the wet bag until 1 a.m. Put your alarm on for 3 a.m. Since you can't get back to sleep, wake up at 2 a.m. and pour a glass of milk. Go to bed at 2:45 a.m. Get up again at 3 a.m. when the alarm goes off. Sing songs in the dark until 4 a.m. Put the alarm on for 5 a.m., get up, make breakfast, keep this up for 5 years, look cheerful. Here's one of my favorites, how to practice dressing your child once he's born. Buy an octopus and a bag. Attempt to put the octopus in the bag so none of its arms hang out. To practice grocery shopping with a child in tow, go to the supermarket with a fully grown goat. Buy your groceries and don't let the goat out of your sight. Pay for everything the goat eats or destroys. And here's how to practice feeding a 12-month-old. Hollow out a melon. Make a small hole in the side. Hang it from the ceiling on a rope and swing it from side to side. Now get a bowl of soggy oatmeal and attempt to spoon it into the swaying melon by pretending to be an airplane. Continue until half the oatmeal is gone. Tip the rest of the oatmeal into your lap, making sure lots of it falls on the floor. And that's just infants or toddlers. Wait until they become teenagers. I'll let you in on a little secret. Nobody is really prepared to be a parent. Parenting requires lots and lots of on-the-job training. In fact, it's been said, parenting is the one job where by the time you're experienced at it, you're unemployed. And yet the feelings of inadequacy don't make the job any less important. Ready or not, you're a parent. And as a parent, you are shaping the world that you live in and in the one that you will leave behind. You're impacting the future of this world by how you treat your child. A parent has enormous power and incredible responsibility. When you pick up that baby, you realize you're holding unlimited potential in your arms. Louis Pasteur once put it this way: when I approach a child, he inspires in me two sentiments, tenderness for what he is and respect for what he may become. One Sunday morning here at Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain, we had a heckler. That's right, we had a heckler. A lady just couldn't believe that I would suggest that a mom's top priority should be her kids. I didn't realize such a thought was so inflammatory, but I suppose it was for her. In the middle of the sermon, all of a sudden, this woman, she's got red hair, veins protruding out of her neck. She jumps up and she starts screaming, "Well, you stay home and change smelly diapers all day." Just so happened, the day before, I had done just that. Kathy had taken some time off, and I had stayed home all day with our baby. And so from the pulpit, I looked that lady straight in the eye, and I told her, "Ma'am, that is exactly what I did yesterday, and it's the most strategic job on earth. The child I cared for with the smelly diapers could grow up to be the world's next great evangelist, or a scientist who discovers the cure for cancer, or the next evil dictator, and the direction he takes will largely depend on my input." See, if you're a parent, you're part of a special power block that's working behind the scenes to shape the world. My parenting days have come and gone. My youngest son is 33 now. And once I was asked, if I had it to do over again, would I do the job any differently? And I said, absolutely. Sure I would. I'm wiser at 66 than I was at 26. But I couldn't have given my parenting any more effort. I can honestly tell you, I left it all on the field. I gave it my all. I could have done better, but I couldn't have tried any harder. You don't always realize it when you bring that baby home from the hospital, but a parent's time to influence their child is limited. Friends, just blink, and they're all grown up. All this week, we're going to be talking about parenting. But before I get started, I want to issue the disclaimer that I always give whenever I speak on this subject. When it comes to kids, there are no guarantees. And this isn't because God isn't all-powerful, or that prayer isn't effectual, or that the Bible isn't infallible. It's because your kids are human, and all humans have a free will. As parents, we do our best. We try to be wise. But in the end, it's the child who decides how he or she will live their life. Like it or not, that's the way God has made it. Reminds me of country singer Barbara Mandrell. Barbara's a devout Christian, very conscientious mother too. When her son Nathan was an infant, she would often sing to him. She sang three songs to her baby boy: "Jesus Loves Me," "This is the day the Lord has made," and "Jesus loves the little children of the world." Barbara always wondered which of those three songs Nathan would sing first, but it was none of the above. To her great disappointment, she says the first song she ever heard little Nathan sing was the tune, "All My Exes Live in Texas." All parents need to understand that there are no guarantees when it comes to raising kids. Think of God Himself. He was the perfect father. Yet both his kids, Adam and Eve, still rebelled. God did everything right, and yet his kids took a wrong turn. Once a mother, she was hurried and hassled. She had dinner guests arriving soon. It was her husband's family, and she wanted to make a good impression. At dinner that night, she asked her little girl if she would ask the blessing. The girl was intimidated. "Mommy, I don't know what to say." You see, the mother wanted to impress her guests, her in-laws, with one of the sweet prayers that her daughter usually prayed. She said, "Oh, honey," she said, "just say the last prayer you heard Mommy pray." The little girl bowed her head and prayed, "Oh, Lord, why in the world did I invite all these people over for dinner?" See, with kids, you never know what to expect. Parenting is a scary, risky proposition. When you sign up for the task, you realize things could go wrong. The world that we live in is a wicked place. Predators roam the streets. Temptation abounds. Our kids grow up surrounded by snares we can't always control. Satan attacks from the outside. Sin pulls from the inside. There comes a point when parents can no longer control their kids' circumstances, and it's up to the child to make wise decisions. And when that time comes, mistakes will be inevitable. As I said, when it comes to raising kids, there are no guarantees. But here's what I can promise. When a parent consults the Bible and adopts God's purpose and parents with God's power, the odds increase dramatically that your kids will turn out okay. In so doing, it's far more probable that your children will know God and walk with God and glorify God in the lives that they live. Here's the good news. God hasn't left us in the dark. We're not on our own. God is the perfect Father. He is the one parent who knows what He's doing, and He's given us insights to make our parenting effective. And so the first four verses of Ephesians 6 contain Paul's principles for parenting. Verses 1 through 3 set out the purpose of a parent. Then verse 4 addresses do's and don'ts. Read with me verse 1. "Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise, that it may be well with you and you may live long on the earth." And then Paul has a word for parents, verse 4. "And you fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the training and admonition of the Lord." And here's how we're going to break down these four verses. In our first session tonight, we're going to discuss a parent's purpose. Tomorrow night, we're going to look at a parent's tools. And on our last night together, we're going to note a parent's avoidances. And there is a method behind my madness. You're the parent, I'm the teacher, and our association makes for a PTA, a parent-teacher association. Here's our outline. P is for purpose. T is for tools, and A is for the things we should avoid. It's a PTA, and we'll start tonight with a parent's purpose. Have you noticed that some people are parents by default? Just having a kid doesn't make you a real parent. No, what makes a parent a true parent is a God-given purpose. C.R. Snyder, he writes about two dads on two separate airplane flights. First was Jenny and her dad. Snyder figured Jenny to be about 3 years old. It was obvious that it was her first flight, and this dad was as excited about it as was Jenny. He explained that the loud noises came from the engines, and the force from the takeoff that pushed them back into their seats was from the power of the engines. He whispered, he said, "Honey, I'll hold your hand if you like. You could tell that she trusted him wholeheartedly. This dad turned the whole trip into a learning time. But Snyder tells of another flight in a different parent and child. Teddy was also around 3 years old. And after dad buckled him in, he ordered him, "Now sit here and be quiet. Daddy's going to sleep." And sleep he did for the whole trip. At times, the little boy was noticeably frightened, but the dead was oblivious to his fears. The slumbering dead ignored his child's thoughts, his needs, his questions. No words or touches were exchanged. In a very real sense, Teddy was flying alone. And just because you sit in the seat next to your child at breakfast or sleep in the room down the hall doesn't mean that your child isn't flying alone. Parenting needs to be intentional and deliberate. All parents need a purpose. And we find our purpose here in Ephesians chapter 6. In verse 1, Paul gives two commands to children. They are to obey and honor their parents. And then he provides two reasons for these two commandments. First, obedience makes sense. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. It's just the right thing to do. I mean, generally, parents are wiser than their kids. A parent's been around the block a time or two. They know stuff their kids don't. Why should a kid have to learn the hard way? Obeying your parents just makes sense. The second reason for a child to obey is that it carries a promise. Paul writes in verse 1, that it may be well with you and you may live long on the earth. If a child obeys and honors his parents, he will probably live longer and live better. God is the only person who loves a child more than his parents do. And thus a child will minimize the dangers in life and maximize its enjoyment just by listening to their mom and dad. Proverbs 30, verse 17 is one of my favorite verses. It should be every father's favorite verse. Parents should teach this verse to their kids, especially when those kids become teenagers. Here's a great verse for a testy teen. The eye that mocks his father and scorns obedience to his mother, the ravens of the valley will pick it out and the young eagles will eat it. What a great verse for a teenager. When your kid bucks and rebels and kicks against his parents, warn them to stay inside. Now, son, if you don't obey your parents, you could be walking down the sidewalk and a flock of birds land on you, knock you down, and start picking at your eyeballs. If this happens, son, don't say I didn't warn you. Hey, every time a bird flies over a rebellious teenager without swooping down on top of the kid and pecking out his eye sockets, God is showing mercy. Of course, I'm being a little facetious. But the correct interpretation of the proverb makes the same point. It's saying that a rebellious child is prone to make foolish and costly mistakes. And as a result, he could die at a young age. And having so alienated the people who love him, there would be no one left willing to give him a decent burial. And in ancient times, his carcass would then just be thrown out as food for the vultures. But the point of the interpretation is the same. You live longer and better when you obey your parents. There's one other reason that kids should obey their parents. We learn to obey and honor God by first obeying and honoring our parents. It's a picture. See, God uses our relationship with our parents to deepen our relationship with Him. How can a person submit to God, an authority they can't see, if they don't submit to the authority in their life that they can see, their mom and dad? Loads of people have a hard time obeying God because they never learned obedience to their parents. I always viewed my children's obedience to me not as an end in itself. I was never a power-hungry dad on an ego trip, nor did I bully my kids just so I could feel like I was in control. I loved my kids. I loved them with all my heart. But I saw their obedience and respect toward me as the first step toward them learning how to relate to God. On the surface, Ephesians chapter 6, verses 1 through 3 are instructions addressed to children, not parents. But I take these verses to communicate a parent's purpose. And this is foundational. You should write this down. The purpose of a parent is to teach their children obedience and respect. Now, that's not what you hear from the world today. But that's what God says. The purpose of a parent is to teach their children obedience and respect. And understand, obedience and respect for one's parents aren't traits that come naturally to your children. Obedience and respect have to be taught and instilled and insisted upon. Thus, the obligation God places upon children becomes the purpose of their parents. Again, the job of a parent is to teach their kids obedience and respect. Feeding, clothing, protecting, educating, entertaining our children are all part of parenthood. But if you're not teaching a child obedience and respect, friend, you're not doing the job. A parent's primary purpose is not to win their kid's friendship or to make their child happy. It's to teach their children obedience and respect. And that is as true with a child at 15 months old as it is with a child 15 years old. God puts no statute of limitation on His command. Obedience and respect are lifelong traits. It's impossible to be a parent, the parent that God desires, until you realize a basic truth about your children. Your kids are little sinners. That's right. They're born rebels. The Bible says that children exit the womb defiant and self-centered. So you don't teach a baby to cry when it doesn't get its way. I have 4 children and 11 grandkids, and laboratory findings reveal selfishness is a natural trait. Recently, I ran across an instructive document. It's entitled Property Law from a Toddler's Perspective. Law number 1, if I like it, it's mine. Law number 2, if I can take it away from you, it's mine. Law number 3, if I had it a while ago, it's mine. Law 4, if I say it's mine, it's mine. Law number 5, if it looks like mine, it's mine. Law number 6, if I say I saw it first, it's mine. Law number 7, if you're having fun with it, it's mine. Law number 8, if you lay it down, it's mine. And lastly, law number 9, if it's broken, it's yours. See, when kids are born, they have no respect for other people, nor are they willing to obey standards that limit their behavior. Children are greedy and selfish and totally preoccupied with 3 people, me, myself, and I. Parents, realize your children are sinful little buzzards. Now, granted, it may not be obvious at first. I mean, a newborn appears so cute and so precious and innocent and tender and adorable. But you got to know deep down inside, your baby is really a diabolical, ruthless, sinister sinner dressed incognito. Many years ago, the Minnesota Crime Commission was established to study the spiraling crime rates in their state. Here's an excerpt from their findings. Every baby starts life as a little savage. He is completely selfish and self-centered. He wants what he wants when he wants it. His bottle, his mother's attention, his playmate's toy, his uncle's watch. Deny these and he sees with rage and aggressiveness, which would be murderous were he not so helpless. He is, in fact, dirty. He has no morals, no knowledge, no skills. This means that all children, not just certain children, are born delinquent. If permitted to continue in their self-centered world of his infancy, given free rein to his impulsive actions to satisfy his wants, every child would grow up a criminal, a thief, a killer, a rapist. Understand, your child resembles 2 people. And I'm not talking about their mom and dad. First, the Bible teaches us that human beings were made in God's image and in God's likeness. According to Psalm 139, every boy, every girl has been fearfully and wonderfully made. All humans bear in their personality the stamp of God upon their life. But your child also resembles another person, and that is the first man, Adam. Did you know you're all a part of the Adams family? And Adam, too, was made in God's image, but something went wrong. For in Genesis 5, verse 3, we're told, Adam begat a son in his own likeness, after his image. See, in Adam, the image of God was dominant, but his son more closely resembled Adam. The Bible teaches that Adam's sin marred God's image in both himself and in his offspring. Adam bit the forbidden fruit and made a choice for all mankind. Through Adam, sin has passed down to all humanity. And due to his sin, you and I and our kids are born with a nature that opposes God. We are rebels from the womb. And this is why your child resembles two people. Despite his or her sin, her own sin, your child still bears the marks of God's creation. Their intelligence, their creativity, their conscience, their moral center, their spiritual hunger and thirst for meaning and truth are all traits embedded in their nature by the hand of God. They are made in His image. But you see, the Adams family is a good thing spoiled. One bad apple can spoil the whole bunch. Adam's sin made pride and selfishness human traits. It robbed us of what God intended. And now, if left by their lonesome, your children will disobey and go their own way. That's why if they're going to learn obedience and respect, they have to be taught. And that is up to you, their parents. And to effectively parent, a child's two resemblances have to be kept in view. You need to help your child identify his or her God-given traits. They need to grow up respecting and rejoicing the value and the talents that God has given them and blessed them with. While at the same time, you need to realize that there's always that rebellion bubbling under the surface that could erupt at any moment. Every child needs parents in their life who will insist on their obedience and their respect. And understand what Paul means when he uses this term, obey, in verse 1. It's a translation of a Greek word that means to hear under or to listen attentively. And thus, the first step in teaching obedience to your children is to cultivate in them a listening ear. See, if you want a child to obey, he or she first needs to be willing to listen. They need an eagerness to receive from you. I like the old saying, parents need to talk to their kids in a way that will encourage them to listen, and listen to their kids in a way that will encourage them to talk. Parents, imagine a 12-foot giant hovering over you with a scowl on their face. They're angry and upset, and it's clear to you you're the object of their frustrations. Well, if you're faced with that scenario, your inclination wouldn't be to sit down and have a friendly chat. You'd run for your life. Well, when a 6-foot-tall parent towers over a 3-foot-tall toddler, that's how the parent appears to the child, like a giant would appear to you. And if you're obviously angry and frustrated, don't expect your child to just eagerly sit there and want to listen. Parents, if you want kids to obey, they have to hear. And I mean more than just your words. Do they hear your heart? Do they sense your love for them? Do you stoop to their level and communicate in ways that they can grasp? And Jesus, the incarnate Son of God, is our perfect example here. You remember, he was the perfect example of someone who humbled himself. He could have stayed on his lofty perch. He could have removed himself from our predicament. Instead, he took on flesh and blood and he became one of us. He descended to our level. He stepped into our shoes. And this is how you should approach your child. You communicate in relatable ways. I remember watching the late Peter Jennings on ABC World News Tonight. After each broadcast, he would usually pick up the telephone. One time he explained why. He says, I don't like news anchors who just sit there and shuffle papers. So I got in the habit of picking up the phone. And guess who Peter Jennings would call? He said, "Sometimes I called the producers to see if they liked the show, but just as often I called my children and told them that I'm on my way home for dinner." I thought that was great. After he gave the news to the world, Peter Jennings engaged in his most vital communication. He called his kids. All parents need to stop shuffling papers and call their kid. Cultivate a listening relationship, and a child will hear your heart and be more inclined to obey. When my daughter Natalie was dating age, we had a rule. Before she could date a guy, I had to meet him. I had to meet the boy. And I'll never forget the first. He wanted to take Nat to the homecoming dance. And so we met at a burger joint near our house. We talked a bit, and then I drove him home. But as we got into the car outside the burger joint, I said to the guy, I said, "Son, do you have a wallet?" He was a little unsure, but he was in no position to refuse. And so I said, "Son, would you hand me your wallet?" So he pulled it out of his pocket, reached down, handed it over to me. I took it and I stuck it in my pocket. Well, we drove home, and when we got to his house, he started to get out. He was sweating by this time. He was under a lot of pressure. And he started to get out of the car. He'd forgotten about his wallet by this point. So I pulled his wallet out of our pocket, and I asked him if he wanted back his wallet. "Oh, yes, sir, I do." And so I handed him the wallet, and he grabbed it, and then I held on to it just for a second. Before I turned it loose, I told him, I said, "I appreciate you trusting me with something as valuable as your wallet. And I think you'll notice that I'm returning it in the same condition when I took it. Now, I'm trusting you with something much more valuable to me than a wallet, and I expect you to return it in exactly the same shape it was when you left with it." Well, my instructions were heard, and they were obeyed. And I think effective communication played a part in the outcome. See, too often we as parents, we only react to our kids. We respond to our kids. We talk without thinking through what we really need and want to say. The key to instilling obedience in our children is to get their ear by communicating in wise and in compelling ways. And realize, too, it's possible for a child to obey a parent without respecting them. See, this is why obedience is just half the goal. A parent's purpose is also to teach their child respect. As Paul puts it, to honor their parent. See, don't settle for mere obedience without respect. When my kids were young, I was quick to address and correct a bad attitude as I was a bad behavior. I was maybe even quicker. See, I've seen parents bribe or threaten their kids to obey. Such an approach may get a desired result, but it doesn't teach the child the importance of respect. It reminds me of the little boy who misbehaved in school. He was made to stand in the corner, but all the while he was seething under his breath. He said to himself, he says, "I might be standing on the outside, but I'm sitting on the inside." That's obedience without respect. See, the Greek word Paul translates here in verse 2 as honor literally means to prize. Parents, do your kids prize you? Have you taught them the value of their parents? When my oldest son, Zach, was just a tot, I asked him one day what he liked most about his dad. He said, "When you wrestle with me." And then I asked him what he liked least about his dad. His reply was obvious: "When you spank me." Then I asked him what he liked most about his mom. He said, "When she cooks me breakfast." Well, I was feeling real daring that day, so I asked again. I said, "What do you like least about your mom?" Well, Zach thought for a long minute. I'll never forget his reply. He said, "Dad, everything mom does is good." That's a son who honors his mom. Here's the key when it comes to teaching kids to honor their parents. Nothing you do will yield results if the parents don't act and speak in an honorable way. Don't be a parent who says, "Do what I say and not what I do." That's a recipe for disaster. Kids can sniff out hypocrisy a mile away. Kids have a baloney meter. They know when you're not living what you say. Parents are an example, whether they want to be or not. In family life, values and truths are more caught than taught. Every parent influences their child for better or for worse. I have a nasty habit, I admit it. When I'm out in the yard, I spit. I just love to spit. I like a good spit. Kathy hates it. She thinks it's a disgusting habit. But I don't even think about it. Over the years, it's just, I spit. Not inside, but out in the yard. I'll never forget the day, many years ago now. I was around in the corner with Zach, Nick, and Natalie all in tow. I spit. Then Zach spit. Then Nick spit. And then our precious, adorable, sweet little princess clears her throat of saliva. And Natalie blows out a big wad. I spit. And Kathy saw it. She saw the whole thing. I couldn't escape. What's funny now is now fast forward 25 years and you're liable to see one of my grandkids mimic G-Daddy and hack out a good old spit. I've managed to pass on my bad habits now to the third generation. That's saying something. But here's the question. What are you teaching your kids? Your example is teaching them a lot. Whether you desire it or not, a child will mimic their parents. If you want your kids to honor you, then you have to act in honorable ways. Well, except for the church today, the days in which we live, a parent doesn't get a lot of help fulfilling this purpose. Media moguls, advertising agencies, film producers, video game creators, music labels aren't very interested in teaching children obedience and respect. Just the opposite is true. Millions of dollars get spent every year to advocate rebellion and to promote disdain for authority. The school system, as well as your children's peers and classmates, aren't helping either. Other than the church, parents are operating in a hostile environment. And this is why parents today need purpose and they need determination. Reminds me of Debbie Kemp's ordeal. It began when she rolled her car up to the self-service pumps. Her 6-year-old daughter Ashley was in the back seat, sleeping away. When Debbie walked around her car to pump the gas, a man climbed into the driver's seat of her vehicle. This fellow was trying to steal her car. Well, the 34-year-old mom said later, she says, I didn't try to be a hero. I was just concerned about my baby. That was part of me in that car. Well, as he drove off, Deborah somehow managed to grab the door and cling to the steering wheel through the window. The thief drove several blocks, dragging her knees on the pavement. Drawing from a hidden reserve of strength as the car was still moving, Deborah managed to hang on and pull the thief out of the vehicle. When he hit the ground, she grabbed the club, the anti-theft device that she kept under the driver's seat. She started beating the bad guy, clubbing him with the club. Witnesses said the man was apologizing, begging Deborah to stop. Well, the moral of the story is don't mess with a mom. Debbie Kemp, skint knees and all, is one parent who's willing to put up a fight for her family. And this is what every parent needs to do today. We live in a world full of disobedience and disrespect, and it's going to rub off on your kids if you don't fight back. We need a purpose, and we need tools to accomplish that purpose. And that's what we'll talk about tomorrow night, a parent's tools. In closing, though, tonight, it was May the 30th, 1982, that God gave to my wife, Kathy, a prophecy. She was at a prayer meeting of pastors' wives when God spoke through one of the ladies. He said, by this time next year, you will have a child. My firstborn, Zach, came into the world exactly 364 days later, on May the 29th, 1983. Prior to that amazing prophecy, Kathy and I had tried for 2 years to have a child, but with no success. And that's when God saw fit to open my wife's womb. And I mean wide open. I tease her now. Barren Karen became fertile Myrtle. We couldn't stop what we couldn't start. Now we couldn't stop. And 4 kids later, there was no doubt God intended for us to be parents. You know, there are a lot of pursuits in my life. But there are very few pursuits in my life that I can say were sanctioned by God. You know, I've never been given a divine mandate to work in my yard or to play golf, although I hope God will say that to me one day, but he never has, not yet. Or piddle on my computer. I've never heard, "Thus saith the Lord, Sandy, read a magazine." But I know beyond a shadow of a doubt that I am called by God to parent my kids. And if you're a parent, you share that same calling. Yet here's a question. Have you been parenting by default? Or do you parent your child with God's purpose in mind? See, just birthing a child doesn't make you an effective parent. The difference is a purpose. Parents, we've only got one shot at this. Let's do it right. Are you teaching your children obedience and respect?